everybody, and welcome to the AHLA General Counsel Roundtable. I'm so excited today to have two wonderful guests. I'm Sarah Swink from the law firm of Nixon Peabody in the Washington, D.C. office. So, Steve, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. Thanks, Sarah. I'm Steve Bender. I consider myself just a simple country lawyer. I'm the chief legal officer for Geisinger. Geisinger is a regional integrated delivery system based in central Pennsylvania and northeastern Pennsylvania. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Steve. And Mark, another simple country lawyer from Long Island?
Well, not so simple country lawyer. I consider myself an island boy by background, but I work for Northwell Health, which is the largest private employer in New York State. We have something like, you know, I keep losing track because frankly, we seem to gain a couple every year, but we have 21 hospitals and a few hundred facilities, ambulatory facilities scattered over the five boroughs, Westchester County. It's been a terrific honor to work for this organization and a terrific honor, frankly, to be here talking with you all today.
Great. I'm so excited to have both of you. I think you're going to give us a real breadth of what's happened in COVID, what's happening in-house at your organizations, and what it's been like to be an attorney during these times, or even just a person during these times. So Mark, let's start with you, because of the position, the geographical position of the hospitals that you serve and the communities that you serve, you had an interesting vantage point to COVID. We're coming up on a year to the lockdown in most states and a lot of the changes that we saw in our lives. Reflecting on this time, what are some of the things that you saw and now looking back over this year?
Yeah, I think the thing that stands out most obviously for me is just the sheer, I don't know if it's the right word, you know, if you can sort of attribute this sort of, a condition to a virus, but the sheer brutality, frankly, of what the virus brought to New York was, for me, amazing. I think many people across the country probably experienced something similar, but just sort of having people's lives upended so suddenly, so swiftly, and for many people completely, forever, irrevocably, because people were dying, people that you knew were dying. We lost a couple of our dear friends, people who represented us, trusted counsel, as a result of the disease in the early days. And, you know, obviously because of that, these were people we trusted. We were friends. We're never going to have the opportunity to see those people again. So from my perspective, that was frankly the most impactful thing of dealing with COVID. And as you know, Sarah, we were, you know, as I say, the center of the center early on in the COVID crisis. And it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. And I think that's probably the best way that I can describe it.
So Steve, you were in Washington, D.C. before you switched jobs. And so you have an interesting vantage point because you were in, you know, the Metro D.C. area and watching that unfold. And then now you're in a different organization. From your vantage point, what did that look like for you? It wasn't the same, obviously, as Mark said, the center of the center. But what did you see, and what were some things that you've been reflecting on over this year?
Yeah, it's been interesting, very troubling to say the least. So yeah, starting the year, I was the general counsel at George Washington University's Medical Faculty Associates. And so we were, watching this unfold in early March, and really beginning the preparation process. And then at some point, you know, shortly after that, I accepted the position to join Geisinger and started July 1st. And so to go from an urban setting where your positivity rate was really kind of off the chart to a rather rural community where it seemed far more manageable was very interesting. And I share, you know, Mark's sentiments about, you know, just the entire odyssey that we've all kind of gone through, whether it's personal or professional. It's certainly been a challenge joining a new organization in the middle of a pandemic. I've never had to, you know, really take on a challenge like that. And, you know, we all have our own kind of, you know, bag of tricks, if you will, but none of us have that one. Yeah. And so just getting to know people and getting to learn a new organization, while masked is still challenging. So my hope is that none of us ever have anything even remotely similar to this past year.
Yeah, Mark, I mean, it's one of the things when you and I have chatted, it's like those hallway discussions and those other kinds of conversations and ways that you can be effective, you know, as an in-house attorney and a leader in your organization, like as Steve said, those kind of tools, those aren't there in the same way at all. I mean, it's not like you can have somebody come into your office even, you know, unmasked and sit and have a chat off, you know, in between meetings. How have you and your organization adapted to those changes?
You know, it was interesting because I think sort of the point about not we manage in a particular way, or we work in a particular way. I think we have a really terrifically integrated and collegial group in our Office of Legal Affairs. And it was always the general approach was basically open doors, bounce ideas. I tell people all the time, and I sincerely mean it, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Living in ignorance is the only stupid thing. So come in, ask the question, let's have a discussion. And that to me was a really significant value of, you know, our Office of Legal Affairs. Obviously with the pandemic, all that went away very, very quickly because we just didn't have what I would call the incidental contact to sort of bounce ideas off each other and just have a discussion and ask about, you know, each other's kids or our families and that sort of thing. So that was clearly something that was missing and that I miss personally. But I think the wonderful thing about what we did was we had always prepared, frankly, to work remotely because living in the Northeast, as many people know, you never know when you're going to be suffering under some significant amount of snow. Snowmageddon, I think, was the expression, right?
Right.
And having to have your people work remotely and figure out ways to get nurses to hospitals and all that good stuff. So from a legal affairs department perspective, what we had in place was a plan. That frankly, we immediately leveraged to basically get everyone out of the office, get them working remotely. And I have to say, it was almost not completely given sort of, you know, the different capabilities of people's networks at home and that sort of thing, but it was almost seamless. And so we pivoted very quickly to get everybody out of the office, getting them working up and running and working remotely, and just having thought about it from sort of a snow perspective really helped us when we had to do it for the pandemic.
I laugh because my kids are in person, and some people say there's no such thing as a snow day anymore, but I still have them. So Steve, you you know, here's Mark talking about, you know, they made a plan, they pivoted, they, and it worked. You walked into the middle of the plan, right? In July
of this year.
So what was that like?
The pie had been half baked at that point. So, you know, I didn't want to be, you know, I'm the new guy. I didn't want to be that disruptive. So we had actually made the decision to move everyone to a work from home status that was going to be permanent. And so we're still working our way through that process. But I guess that's the question I have for Mark. Are you guys planning on coming back?
Not if I have anything to say about it. Okay, I'm kidding. No, I have to say, I am one of the, you know, Luddites in the organization because I frankly hate working from home. I don't like it. I think I like to keep a bit of a disconnect between my home life and my work life, even if it means I stay in the office until 10, 11 o'clock at night. I just want to be able to go home, get in bed, have dinner, and talk to my kids. You know, I find it very difficult, frankly. I did the at-home thing for the first few months of the pandemic. And what I found was it was just, frankly, around the clock, completely and just an interminable day, just never ended. And, you know, I thought, frankly, that my kids suffered from it a little bit. I know my wife certainly suffered from it a little bit. So I am one of those people. I actually like getting out of the house, coming to work, giving my wife, my kids their space. I have my space. And that works really well for me. There are other people in my department, obviously, who prefer working from home. But, you know, I look forward, and I'm going to.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I completely agree. Yeah, loses the demising line, right? It's like when you're working from home, it just work just kind of leaches into every other facet of what you're doing. It's really hard to manage.
Yeah.
Well, I laugh because people are like missing their commutes. Like, think about that for a second.
No, it's like decompression time.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm also laughing because I'm at home and my kids go to the office. They go to school. They're actually lucky enough to be in in-person school. And so I'm at home and they go to the office, but when they go to the office, their school, they're six. It's actually nice. And then they were just home and I have to laugh. I had another one of those bad Zoom things, but luckily it actually worked out where I'm like having not a difficult conversation with a client, but we're talking about rolling out something and I'll have to send this to him because he'll laugh. And I'm like sitting there and we're having like this conversation, we're waiting for someone else to come. And both my twins walk in because my son had lost another tooth and he just had to show me it. And so he's walking in with this bloody tooth and his mouth all bleeding. And I just said, you know, I mean, the good thing that comes out of the working from home is that maybe we're all a little bit more human. Like, there's nothing I could do. Like, it was just, it was what it was. Like, they never do that. I think I've told every time on this podcast, every time they have. So it really hasn't been that many, but they're like, at least they're, you know, there's this theme of like, well, maybe we'll be a little bit nicer to each other, right? Maybe this working at home, something positive that comes out of it is like, that we are humans, that we have a home. Like, that it's not so separated that it's not part of who we are. I don't know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, for having little kids, I think is certainly an interesting dynamic unto itself. Having older kids is a complete game changer because my wife and I thought we were empty nesters. And all of a sudden, you know, we were like in a certain chapter in life and now we're overflow nesters. So, you know, you should not have your adult children back home. Like, you know, it was great to have them around the dinner table. It was sort of initially it was like, wow, what a bonus. And then after a while, you're like, wait, this isn't supposed to happen this way. So we're still reeling from that. But there's, I think, hope on the horizon. And my daughter has gone back to college and my son will soon be moving back out and resuming his job in New York City. So I think there will be some degree of a return to normalcy. At least I hope so.
Your fingers crossed. I look forward to it. I tell folks this all the time. I'm like a pig in slop. Some people will recognize who listen to this exactly what that means. But if you've ever seen a pig, they seem to root around in their little world and love it. I need to come to my slop in the office. So I look forward to normal.
I knew there was something wasn't right when I went to the dentist. And that was like the first time I'd had like an in-depth conversation with somebody that like wasn't in my house or on a Zoom call. And I was like happy afterwards. I was like, what's wrong with me?
The dentist is like, ma'am, it's your appointment's over. It's time to go.
Right, exactly. Like, wait, this is not, like, it's okay. Like, you'll be okay. But yeah, just that those types of things that you don't even notice that you're just going throughout, you know, we kind of adapt, you know, at some point everyone was like, oh no, we can't all be at home. And then we adapted to that. And then it was like, oh no, we can't, like, oh my gosh.
But don't you also think that, I feel like Friday has lost its meaning to me at least.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So Friday, there's no difference between my Friday and my Saturday or my Sunday. You know, I'm still, you wind up working because you're not socialized. So you're really just kind of doing the same thing 7 days a week.
Steve?
Yes.
You know what we call Friday now?
What's that?
Two more work days till Monday.
Exactly right.
I know.
So, like, I will say one of the best things that's happened is my email inbox is totally manageable because I'm working way into the night.
Yep.
And on weekends.
Yep.
Let's not keep that. Maybe that's not what we want going into the future. I don't know. We'll have to think about that. I also, so thinking about the future, you know, I can't believe it's March. I mean, this is amazing. It's March 5th. And we're headed kind of into the springtime. We were, at one point we were talking about flu and would there be flu and what was going to happen. And now we have the vaccine rolling out and we're heading into spring. You know, I keep you have a crystal ball, but what are you thinking the next like 3-6 months are looking like? Like, how are you, what personally, your organization, what are you thinking about? I'll start with you, Steve.
Well, you know, on a personal note, I think we're all waiting for, what I have heard people refer to as the revenge travel to occur, where people are just going to be traveling for the sake of traveling because they couldn't before. But, you know, it really is largely contingent upon the rollout of the vaccines and getting closer and closer to herd immunity, hopefully. But work-wise, you know, we had an interesting conversation the other day about when we would have our next in-person board meeting. And we started to plan around it to see how we could pull it off, making sure that we were able to distance each other and have a large enough room where we could all meet, making it, of course, voluntary. So no one felt compelled to show up. But that was really one of the first times that I started to think down those lines. And again, having recently joined the organization, I only know my board through Zoom. Or whatever video conferencing service we're using. And the same goes for my team. So I'm really looking forward to connecting with everyone in person where we get to interact in the same room.
How about you, Mark?
Yeah, I share sort of the same hope that we can actually, again, I need to be around people. It's just that important to me. And so I really look forward to, getting that. Anyone who will listen, I tell them, get the vaccine. A friend of mine called me this morning because he was somewhat reluctant to take the vaccine. And I just said, what are you, crazy? Get the vaccine because I have an interest here. It's not just about you. It's also about me. You need to get to herd immunity, so get the vaccine. So I really look forward to that and hopefully to a return to a little bit of normalcy, to get on that travel crush that everyone anticipates happening. I will never complain about a crowded airport or a crowded aircraft ever again, I promise. So that's what I personally look forward to. From an organizational perspective, we continue to meet literally every day as an organization in terms from a senior leadership level to continue to track what's happening with the virus. I know some folks have expressed, some people in our infection control group have expressed some concern about a plateau, if you will, in terms of what we've been seeing as a trending down in terms of the number of cases. So that's a little bit of a concern for them. But right now the news is generally good. And I think we're also planning at some point in the next 3 or 6 months to see what we can do about starting to get some folks back to work. What one of the things that Steve mentioned earlier about some of this transitioning to a permanent model, our folks, frankly, are also looking at that because, you know, the cost savings potentially in just in terms of real estate, right, is something that my penny pinching friends in finance are watching like hawks. So that may be something that happens. But from my perspective, I look forward to getting back to work. And I think as an organization, most folks are actually looking forward to getting back to work.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, we are going through that now. One of the initial expenses, though, is making sure that everyone has the technology they need to work from home, as well as even just the furniture they need to work from home.
Yeah.
Not excluding good bandwidth and good connectivity.
Yep.
So there are costs associated with that. But once you get through them, I think it should yield a net savings. But what you lose then is that hallway conversation and the connectedness that you had before. And that's been a grave concern for me. And I, you know, we all know people tend to forum shop and the best way to deal with that as attorneys is to make sure that your internal communication is tight as it can be. And so what I've encouraged my team to do, we use Teams. And instead of emailing people or even texting, have a video call with them, you know, in place of the hallway conversation, just to make sure that we're tightly aligned and you know, we can make sure that the communication, the interdepartmental communication is as tight as it can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a really good point, Steve, because you want to talk with one voice. And if the voices are all spread out, you want to make sure that you're still talking with one voice in the department.
Yep.
So one of the things I'm laughing because the laptop thing, I had a laptop where I must have been working too much because I burnt out the letters O. Like, you can look at your keyboard right now, O, K, L, and the period from time to time. And so I ended up getting a new laptop shipped to me, but there was a time period where I didn't have one. And I was like, do I just then write all my sentences with question marks and exclamation points if the period doesn't work? And is that actually a good lawyer move? It might actually be a good lawyer move. I'm not sure. Like, maybe they'll listen more if you have question marks and exclamation points. So another thing I've been thinking about is I am a empty person, a half glass full person, which is the innovation. Like, what, and like the idea that we did, like Mark, you talked about the suffering that people have gone through, and it's real at all levels of kind of the country's gone through a trauma and the world's gone through a trauma. And so what can we get out of this time frame, right? Like, what can we, and some of it's, you know, everything from like the fact that, you know, the vaccine went through, you know, the FDA process and like from like identification to starting to roll out in a year, or the fact we're looking at telehealth or other modes of, other modes of ways to care for people, or we're looking at health equity. I mean, I would just, even the other day I was talking to somebody and I don't know, I said something and it just felt like so obvious, but this is what we were not doing before, which was, you know, we make people drive to the office to get their blood pressure checked, but then like their blood pressure goes up driving to the office and waiting in the office to get their blood pressure checked. And then we put them back in the car to put their blood pressure back up. And that was like an efficient business where there could be a way to not do that. And we're looking at that, but here's something that just seems so obvious now to all of us, but or maybe not. Maybe I just threw that out there and people can think about it. But you know, these idea of innovations, like that we kind of shook things up and we knew some of the problems, but maybe something positive will come out of it. Mark, what do you think about that? And what are some things you see your organization doing?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting question. And what, you know, as much as we want to return to normal, I think it's an excellent question. excellent opportunity to sort of not return to normal. What do I mean by that? We've done so many things in the name of responding to a crisis. And the question always is, you know, for any, you know, any Star Wars fans out there, is whether the Empire strikes back, right? Whether you get to a point where people, because they are accustomed to doing things a particular way, sort of revert to a normal. So normal isn't necessarily all good. And given what we've done from an innovation perspective with respect to the vaccine development, the approval process, the almost borderline stunning and virtually obscene expansion of telehealth, you know, do we want to return to normal? Or, you know, and does the Empire strike back? Does the Empire say, well, you know, under the Social Security Act, yada, 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 therefore you can't do this? Or do we push our leaders and our representatives to say, no, this is something that worked really well. Here are the things that didn't work well. Let's try to fix those things. But why are we going back to quote unquote normal? So I think that is the one significant opportunity, I think, that came out of this crisis, is that, you know, it's one of the, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. We did a lot by way of moving many, many things that we've been talking about for many, many years forward during the course of this crisis. And it's always going to be, how committed are we, frankly, to pushing that further now that we've had the very real experience of dealing with it in the course of a crisis? So that to me is the really big question.
Great.
Well, yeah, if you believe the axiom that necessity is the mother, or maybe it should be father of invention. Either way, mother or father, the parent of invention.
I'm gonna say parent.
I didn't want to offend the fathers, yes. It could also be of the careful of what you wish for scenario, right? Mm-hmm. Because we all work in a space where we tend to see, you know, the worrisome side of the initiatives that we embark upon. And right away, when we start thinking about telehealth, we're all going to jump to privacy. Mm-hmm. And those concerns. And it's great that from a regulatory perspective, they have relaxed some of the standards in terms of state law licensing, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But the reality is there are going to need to be some controls, and we don't really see them in place at the moment. The other concern I you know, focus on the mental health challenges in terms of delivery of care and services that we have throughout the country. And I see telehealth as being a great opportunity to kind of bend that curve. But again, you're talking about even heightened privacy concerns.
Right.
So, you know, I know that we're all challenged with those initiatives. I don't necessarily have all the answers, but I think we have to be thoughtful in the way that we approach it.
Great.
Just the idea that the new stark exceptions and anti-kickback safe harbor around cybersecurity was included purposely, I think says a lot, doesn't it? About where the government is, where the government's concerned enough that they would be okay with an arrangement that's not the 1585 split of an EHR, right? That they are really like worried about it. It's interesting because I just, you know, you reflect on healthcare again and like think, how dependent is healthcare on transportation, right? And as a barrier to access. And I remember when the OIG advisory opinion started coming out around transportation. I also remember being in house before they were there and seeing the transportation issues, even in an urban area or a rural area. I mean, they can be barriers. You know, I just think about people leaving the ER and they just have no way to get anywhere. It doesn't even matter if,
or like, just even getting your vaccine. Getting to a vaccination location.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is the example that I was going to bring up, because if it's not really apparent in the context of how the vaccine is rolled out, and, you know, sort of the drive up locations and the implications of that for people who don't have that capability. You know, it's been an issue in healthcare for so long, and we're just seeing it sort of, you know, completely writ large in the context of this vaccine rollout.
I mean, I hope that it, like I said, these examples of, it's a health inequity. Like, you shouldn't have to be able to, you know, have that. Not, you're saying like the haves and the have nots in transportation, or just our own infrastructure in the United States. Like, it might, you can't always get here from there. They would say, like, in some cities, it's like the last mile. Like, there is public transportation, for example, but you have to walk a mile on both sides of it. Like, I mean, that's not reasonable for a lot of people. The other thing I was thinking about as well, I guess it's, is this idea of population health and payment reform, and, you know, and how this pandemic will look at that. You know, at some point we had, you know, ACOs, and we still have them out there. We had this transformation that was happening, and it seemed to, like, I don't not say slow down, but there was clearly like the idea of these, the government looking at the sprint rules, which is where that cybersecurity exception and safe harbor come from, this idea of care coordination and making sure people don't fall through the cracks in our healthcare system. But now here we sit, and we do have these lessons. A lot of us knew what, we knew these, what these issues were. It's just, they're so highlighted by this pandemic. Do you, what do you think about the future of those types of initiatives? Like where we sit right now on March 5th, I don't, you don't have to go into too far in the future, but on March 5th, where do you think we are now? How about Steve? What do you think?
Yeah, I can, you know, give the Geisinger perspective, which is, you know, this is sort of our strength. I'm so proud to join an organization that they really place this at the top of the totem pole. And we have this initiative of making better health easier. And maybe that's one of the hallmarks of an integrated delivery system, because we really have the ability to shift to a value-based kind of a protocol. And we've had a lot of success in making sure that people have access to high quality care, and that it's not, we're not focused on volume, we're focused on value. And so for us, we see nothing but opportunity in front of us, and grow, and our growth strategy is sort of aligned with that. So that shift from leaving DC and coming to Geisinger has been just an eye-opening experience for me.
How about you, Mark?
Yeah, if you, I think as an organization, we are absolutely cognizant. I don't think I've been in a meeting in the last year with our CEO or our COO where this issue has not been a central focus of one part or another of the discussion. And I think, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, in the interest of full disclosure, I think everybody recognizes that here, in the Northeast, at least in the New York City area, there's still too much of the sort of old fee-for-service model that that we rely upon, frankly. And I think there is a recognition that healthcare has to, stress has to move in a different direction, so that we can, frankly, you know, at the end of the day, what we're in this business for, improve people's lives without, frankly, making it so cost prohibitive on many, many levels. So I think it's been a focus. We have expanded and are expanding some of our programs to be cognizant, not just of, frankly, the healthcare aspects of it, but of every aspect of the of our patients' lives, you know, focusing some programs on food issues, on food security issues, focusing on other barriers to health, you know, something as simple as where does one have the opportunity to get healthy if they're worried about getting evicted, and focusing some of our programs and our efforts on that. So it's sort of pivoting from sort of the traditional fee-for-service model to one where we look at the patient more holistically, frankly. Because I think there is an ever increasing recognition that that's the only way that you're really going to have a meaningful impact on people's health, health condition in the long term.
I think, you know, I think you're so right about that. It's interesting because this is my own personal opinion, but as somebody who worked on some of the first ACOs and really felt very passionate about this idea of like care transformation, and even some of my first quotes were about caring for like the individual, it just seems like we didn't get far enough given the time frame that we, like, I can think about those first ones we did and how much time has gone. And I think you're right, Mark. Like, we look about, and we use these words like social determinants of health and food insecurity. And there's, this is again, my own personal opinion, but at some point it's like somebody's starving. Like, they don't know where they're going to get their next meal. Their kids might be getting their food at home or might have it being delivered now because, and like, if you're trying to survive, how can you work? I mean, it's hard enough for us to like, if you, to remember to take, like, for example, your blood pressure or your medication. Mm-hmm. And then we ask of people who are in survival mode. And I think given that where we're looking at the percentage of people that are going to have food insecurities, or like Steve, what you said are mental health issues are going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some outrageously huge percentages of what they think the mental health crisis will be. There are doctors out there who are getting out and speaking about it. Like, this is the next pandemic, is this mental health pandemic or this food insecurity pandemic.
Yeah, as I think about it, you know, look, we can land on Mars, right? We should be able to solve these issues.
Well said.
Thank you. That's good. Like, yeah, let's just, I mean, it's right. And part of it's like, it's so simple. Like, let's stop talking about it. Let's do it.
Well, I made the comment to my dad, who's a scientist, and he said, the reason we can land on Mars is because it was initiated by scientists, not politicians.
Very interesting. Yeah, I love that. So, you know, let's get back to, like, so we talked a little bit about, like, on some of those podcasts, like the things that people do personally to try to get through this time. I mean, Mark, you're talking about being a pig in the slop and you don't have your slop. And, you know, people have talked everything from, like, I meditate under trees now, to like, I go for walks, I play soccer, I make sure I eat dinner with my family every day. What are some of the things that you have found that have brought you, like, kind of these, like, I think about back over them, like these kind of moments of joy that I had, like these little times that I make sure I grab during these times just for myself, right? What are some of the things that you've done to do that? I'll start with you, Mark.
Oh, I started painting.
That's amazing. What kind of painting do you do?
Mostly landscapes, you know, but it's just something that's completely different than what I would ordinarily do. I am not good, for the record, you know. this is more therapeutic, clearly, than an artistic endeavor. Let's be clear about that. But I started painting because, okay, you know, I don't want all the carbs from bread. My friends were telling me that they started doing breads. Another friend was experimenting with dumplings. Okay, you know, I don't need to eat anymore. Thank you very much. So painting. And that's where I landed. So, and you know, the wonderful thing is that it just gives you an opportunity to concentrate on something else and frankly not think about anything else. That's the beauty of it. I've found it's quite meditative. So that's what I started doing.
How about you, Steve?
You know, I would say I have learned to fail miserably at managing all of it. Before the pandemic, I was a very disciplined person. I woke up at 5 and I worked out. And I was sort of like, you know, and I was sort of very goal oriented. And since the pandemic, I still wake up at 5 and I still work out, but my heart is not in it. And you know, as I'm doing it, I'm kind of almost going through the motions, thinking to myself, you're wasting your time. There's a pandemic. So hopefully when this thing ends and the weather breaks, I'll be able to rededicate myself to it. But for the time being, it almost feels like I'm just kind of hanging on.
Yeah. You know, Steve, what I tell people all the time is just hanging on is what I call the recipe for a successful day, right? As long as you're hanging in there.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah. I think, I haven't figured out the right balance of things either, Steve. That's like the perfect thing that I can do, but painting sounds lovely. I'll have to think. Oh, maybe I'll think about that. I'll contemplate that, yeah. Especially if I don't have to be good.
Exactly.
I'm afraid if I suggest that I want to take up painting, my wife will say, "Okay, start with this room."
Exactly. Oh my God.
Yeah, which is why I'm painting mine this spring, right? So it's the way it works.
That's great. So you know, with that, why don't you let me know, let the audience know something you'd like to leave them with. What's something? I'll start with you, Steve. What would you like to leave the audience with?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's something I alluded to, or actually stated earlier, which is the remote nature of our work these days has really placed a significant premium on our interdepartmental communications. And there's never been a more important time that we try to connect with each other, but not necessarily just for the human interaction of it, but also to make sure that we circle the wagons, because I think we'd all agree that, you know, your in-house legal department is frequently put upon and challenged. And so it's very easy for your internal clients to kind of poke holes in the uniformity of the work that we do. And so when we're scattered to our houses, it becomes even more easy for that to occur. And so my suggestion really is to find ways to connect with each other, share information, and to be able to, you know, advance the cause and to really unite behind the common work that we're doing in a way that is as effective as it was when we were all in the same office.
Yeah, I think that's that's almost a great sentiment for any workplace, and actually maybe even life right now. I think that's wonderful. Mark, how about you? What would you like to leave the audience with?
I think Steve's statement was terrific, because that also, if I can echo some of it, that really is the challenge now, because as I said before, we were such a collegial group that and I can give people some practical tips. We've done, we have a regular Friday happy hour now, where people get on a Zoom, they can come with beverage or without, whether it's an adult beverage or, you know, pop, you know, it doesn't matter. And folks get on a call and they say, hello, if you can attend, you can attend. If you can't, you can't, no pressure. Get on a call, talk to people, try to maintain that connectedness, and not just frankly for the benefit of the work. I think it indirectly benefits the work if you can just talk to your colleagues, see them every once in a while, have a couple of meetings scheduled, you know, at least every other week, where you connect just for the sake of connecting. Simply because you're not in the office doesn't mean that you should lose touch with each other. And I think if I can leave the audience with any sort of message, that's the one that I suggest that they take away from it.
Oh, great. I appreciate, Steve and Mark, you joining us today. And I appreciate the audience listening in. And I really like the idea of leaving with the theme of a connection, both personal and professional. So I'll put an exclamation point on that. Thank you all for joining us. Yes, with my laptop, my broken laptop.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it worn out? It might be worn out.
Might be worn out. A lot of exclamation points going on. But thank you everyone for joining us. And we have more to come. Thank you all for joining us. Bye.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.